Welcome to the Menopause and Cancer Podcast with me, Danny Binnington. Today's episode is brought to you by Biosera London, a multi-award-winning natural skincare collection by founders and sisters Sarah and Lauren. Their range of products is one of the very few things that I'll allow to go near my own skin. Innovative plant oil blends deliver vital nutrients and enzymes supporting the skin's microbiome. But the brand story began when Lauren, at the age of 23, was diagnosed with a life-threatening form of leukemia, and she only had a 20% chance of survival. Lauren had months of chemotherapy, total body irradiation, and eventually a life-saving stem cell transplant from her own sister, Sarah. Her skin, after that, became so super sensitive, it started to react to everything. So Sarah developed innovative formulas that cared for Lauren's skin. Those two girls are just amazing, and the rest is history. I've personally bought the Hero Facial Oil for years now. That feeling when the oil goes onto my skin, it's just so lovely. If you go to buysaralondon.com now and you type in code DANI20, that's D-A-N-I-20, you can access a really special offer too. I'm so happy I can share this with you. You'll get a 20% discount for your first order on your chosen product. So go to buysaralondon.com and type in code DANI20. Hi, I'm Danny Binnington and welcome to my podcast. This podcast is for anyone who's been affected by cancer and menopause. I'll be speaking to special guests and menopause experts to help us find solutions to our symptoms and, of course, address the greater picture. We're going to talk about everything from mental health to physical health, sexual health to bone health, and everything in between. Nothing is off limits. Welcome. Hello and welcome to today's episode on the podcast. How are you? Each week, I'm trying to bring you something different because I want to expand our thinking in how we think about managing and navigating menopause after a cancer diagnosis. Regardless of your cancer, regardless of your staging, regardless of where you live. And today, I want to dive into a really beautiful story, and that is Stacey's story. And what strikes me so much about Stacey's story, Stacey has gone from being diagnosed with cancer at 30 to feeling totally shut away and locked down. She describes, like I know I also, you know, could relate really well to that, when she was first diagnosed with cancer and was going through active treatment, it felt like her own personal pandemic. She shut herself away from the world. Now, just recently, Stacey was on a Channel 4 documentary with Davina McCall, and she openly spoke about her menopause journey. And how Stacey managed to go from A to Z is such a huge deal. She's come such a long way, and I'm so grateful she shares her journey and what happened to her on the podcast with us today, because I want you to know it is possible that, yeah, we might not be able to get rid of all of our symptoms, and it might not just all just turn amazing immediately. However, you can be on this journey, and this journey can go and move towards a more positive experience. And that positive experience can happen on lots of different layers. And I'm sharing with you what Stacey has got to say today, and I'm super excited to bring her on. Hi, welcome, Stacey.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So we've just been chatting for a good half hour about all sorts of things, and it's great. And I thought we need to press record now, otherwise everyone is going to miss our conversation.
Yeah, good idea.
It's a sunny Saturday. I'm in Surrey. Where are you, Stacey? Where do you live?
I live in Camberwell in London.
Yeah, cool. Welcome. So Stacey, just recently in the papers, there was another comment by a medical journal published, and they said, menopause is mainly a natural transition and many people don't need to medicate it. How does that make you feel?
Well, I can understand that that's some people's experience. And that's fine and very lovely for those people. But in my experience, it's wholly untrue and mildly offensive.
Yeah. I always think medical professionals really need to start differentiating, because there are people like us who think, what are you talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of just like a big change that happens for many reasons in people's lives, whether it's medically induced or whether it happens naturally. But I feel like it's just like a blanket word. And there's so many different parts and different things that go on behind the scenes that people are like, well, you've either got a good menopause or a bad menopause and that's it. Or you've got a natural one and you've got a chemically induced one and that's it. And it's just
there's so much more to it. How did you get there?
How did I get there? Well, I had a medically induced menopause because I had breast cancer, and I was diagnosed when I was 30 years old, and my breast cancer was estrogen positive, which meant that after I'd had chemotherapy and a lot of surgery, I had to have treatment where I took I had Zoladex injections monthly for 2 years, and I took another drug called exemestane daily. And those drugs, they like severely reduced the amount of estrogen that was in my body. So the idea of doing that is to prevent the cancer coming back.
Let's explore that time a bit more, because I'd like to. So for today, you know, we're all so different, we're thrown into menopause differently, but at the age of 30,
yeah,
it's the last thing you expect. I was 33, so I can only a little bit relate. But how was that journey from sort of that diagnosis?
It was a surprise. So when I first found a lump, I thought about it for a couple of weeks, maybe about a month, thinking, should I go see someone, should I not? And my whole experience until I was diagnosed was basically the whole vibe was, don't worry, you're really young, it'll be fine, but we should check you out anyway. And I had like a biopsy, and they were like, it's going to be fine, you're really young. And I was thinking, this will be all right. And turns out it wasn't all right. And then everyone was shocked. Oh, you're so young. How can this have happened?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So all of that happened, right? And then you went through surgeries, like you said, and chemotherapy when you're in your early 30s. Did you continue to work, or how was your life? Was it put on hold?
No, everything was put on hold. I had thought I would kind of be able to work from home and deal with it in a way that I could still live parts of my life whilst having treatment, which I know some people do very well and some people do half and half. But when it came down to it, I stopped everything. When I was having chemotherapy, it was probably like 6 months worth of chemotherapy. I stayed inside most of the time. I didn't really go out. I had visitors every now and again on the last week before the next round, when you're feeling pretty normal. But I kind of, it was quite isolating, and I was just kind of just like getting by day by day, doing it and not working, not going out. It was like my whole calendar just cleared, empty. Yeah. Done. Doesn't matter anymore, because it didn't. But
it's like your own internal pandemic, isn't it? Is, you know, in lockdown, everyone was shut away and life changed so drastically. And I remember experiencing the pandemic and lockdown, and I remember thinking, I know this feeling. It's when your whole life, your whole world changes from one moment to the next, and nothing will ever be, or I thought, will ever be remotely the same again. And I could really sort of, it's a similar experience, because your whole world became different.
Yeah. Well, when we did have the first lockdown, I thought, oh, this is fine, I've been here before. Because it was like having, my own personal lockdown.
Yeah.
And I also was, when I was having chemotherapy, part of me was kind of, maybe not terrified, but very anxious about, I didn't want to get sick. I didn't want to pick anything up from anyone else. I didn't even want to get a cold. I didn't drink any alcohol. I didn't want to do anything that would make me feel worse than I was already feeling.
Yeah. And yet the deprival of social connection, of the things we enjoy doing, the meetings of friends, the going out, the enjoying nature and people is sometimes making us also feel worse, right? Because these are important emotional things that yes. give us joy.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't thinking too much about that at the time. I was very much in a just this, like, that was my only goal, was just to get through the rounds of chemotherapy. We just have to do that. And we just have to get through every day. And that was like, that's all I focused on. So yeah, everything else just kind of disappeared. It was not important anymore. And yeah, it must have, well, it did. I was deprived of, you know, a lot of social interactions and things like that. But that's how I did it. And exactly. It was fine for me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so important because there will be many people listening to today's episode who are also maybe in their 20s, 30s, in their younger years, being diagnosed with different cancers. And it's important for us to say, hey, we all do it so differently. Like we said earlier, some go into social media and talk about their experience from day one. It's taken me many, many years to be able to talk about it. And it's almost, I had this emotional jet lag of hiding it all away. And then years later, and I still can't stop talking about it. And I'm nearly 9 years on and I'm still here talking about my menopause and cancer experience. And I'm scared. I'm guessing I'm still processing. When you had chemo, did your period stop?
No, they didn't. They were different for sure, but they didn't stop. The only thing that kind of triggered the menopause was when I started taking these Zoladex injections. And I think I had my first one after my last round of chemotherapy. And I remember I made a note that I knew that my periods had stopped 10 days after I had the first Zoladex injection. So I knew from the chemotherapy, everything was kind of okay to some extent, but yeah.
Yeah. And how much was the effects of Zoladex discussed with you? The side effects, the menopause, how much awareness did you have?
So when I was first diagnosed, my breast care nurse, I remember being in a room with my breast care nurse, and I was with my partner, and she was wonderful, and she set out a plan of, we're going to do this in this order, in this order, and then maybe we'll switch the order of some things, and hopefully we'll have this surgery, and then all of that stuff. And then at the end, she definitely mentioned the menopause, but I don't know what the context was. I didn't really care, to be honest. I just thought, like, there's so much in front of me. There's so much to do. I hope I even get to that part where there is the menopause. You know, at the time, like, the end goal seemed to be the menopause. So I was like, great. So yeah, I spoke about it very briefly. And it was just none of that was going in, because there was just so much other stuff going on. And then since that part, really, no one spoke anything. No one mentioned anything about the menopause. And then I had chemotherapy. I started taking these injections and nothing. It just happened. And then I realized that I wasn't having periods. And my first thought was, this is great. I'm not having periods. How wonderful.
Because it was good to not have a period, or because you thought, this is great, my drugs are working?
No, I thought it was great. It's good not to have one. Like, what a hassle.
Yeah.
One less thing to deal with. And then, I suppose I started on these injections and I didn't even get like a leaflet. No one gave me any guidance. It was just like, this is what happens next. Deal with it. That was.
And for how long were you told this is going to happen? So monthly injections, for how long? What was the initial idea?
So the injections I had one every month for 2 years, and I didn't really notice in the beginning. So I knew my periods had stopped, but I didn't really know how I was meant to feel, or like, I couldn't tell if I was entering the menopause, or I couldn't tell if my body felt the way it felt because I just had loads of chemotherapy, or just absolutely. Because I had cancer. And then I started thinking about how I don't even know how I'm meant to feel as a normal person anymore, even anyway, if I wasn't. Yes. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it didn't really click that it was a medically induced menopause for quite some time, because there was so many different factors that I didn't really know who I was inside anymore.
Yeah. You know, the timeline that you describe, I think it's so important for anyone listening to really think, what was your timeline, or how did you feel at certain times? Because when I had my surgery, or in the early days of active treatment, I would have given my left arm, my legs, my earlobes. I would have said, cut it all off. I don't care of the consequences. I need to stay here alive.
Yes.
And so consequences, like you say, menopause was the end thing. I didn't even care about it. And there were decisions I've made then that didn't think about my long-term health. And I guess it's I'm wanting to say this is normal. We go through different phases of processing this, and we can't from day one be totally clued up about what do I want to do about medically induced menopause. And at the same time, if someone had said, Stacey, this now means you're in a medically induced menopause, this is what could have happened, I'm hearing from you, would have been helpful at one point?
It would have been helpful from the beginning, because so the way I dealt with a lot of my cancer diagnosis is that I didn't read too much about what was going to happen to me. I just thought, I think it's kind of similar to what you just said, I just thought, I need to do this. Like, whatever it is, I'll just say yes.
Yeah, me too.
And even when I had I had a mastectomy and a diaphragm reconstruction, and I knew what the surgery was, and I read the leaflet my surgeon gave me, but I thought, that's it. I don't want to know about anything else. And then after my surgeries, that there are some things that had happened, and some things that were going on in my body that kind of surprised me, because I hadn't read up about these things. But that's how I dealt with stuff. And so with the menopause, I hadn't read anything. I hadn't kind of had the opportunity to become educated or be educated by people that knew what they were going on about. And so it took me a long time to get to the point where I think I was ready to really look online and read about what the menopause was doing to me, and find out, you know, how other people are coping. And it was just a long process of me getting ready to find out some information. And I think if I was told right from the beginning and just handed or being signposted in, you know, to some the correct people or some just decent advice, I might not have looked at it for a couple of months, but I would have had it, and it would have been there, and it would have made my life a bit easier at the point when I was ready to explore more about what was going on.
Because what you said resonates with me in terms of it's how I sort of entered my menopause. It was very much me driven, patient led. I needed to find out what I was going to do after my surgery. And so I prepared, and you say it took me a long time to get ready to know more about the menopause and to find out it shouldn't be you led by you, right?
Yes. No, it shouldn't.
It needs to be led by the people who navigate and help us navigate our care.
I can understand why my oncologist wouldn't give me advice on the menopause, because that's not their job. I can understand why I didn't get support from X people, but the menopause that I experienced was because of my cancer treatment. So there should have been, I feel like there just needs to be another department, and the menopause department that's tied into the cancer department. And just there's just this big void where this information doesn't exist and the support doesn't exist. And, you know, we are not the only two people that have had this experience. It is very common for people to experience chemically and surgically induced menopauses from not just breast cancer, all types of cancer. It's insane.
And it's the void you describe It's messages I get every single day. No support, lack of support, conflicting information. Who can help? Is there anyone out there? I just feel like I'm going through this cold turkey. There is no help. I'm on my own. And it's a repeated message. Yeah. But when you said earlier, you don't know who you were, like who you were anymore. How did you then figure out, I need to dig into the menopause? You know, how did you think, okay, I'm now going to do menopause? And what was your starting point? So you went online?
Yeah. So I went online and I tried to find things about menopause after cancer. And yeah, I found lots of stuff. And it was all aimed at people who were double my age. So a lot of things that I was reading about were people who were already at a different stage in their lives, you know, internally. They might have been nearing the menopause anyway, or they might not have done, or it might have changed their menopause that they were having anyway. But so I've just found it so difficult reading about someone else's body that has lived twice as long as I've lived. So internally, just, you know, if no one had had cancer, my body is not the same as someone twice my age. And my body is not the same as someone 20 years younger than me. And so I couldn't even relate to all these kind of experiences that people were writing online. I just couldn't connect to any of them. And then the things that I thought I was missing out on because of the menopause are not things that someone twice my age feels that they're missing out on. And you know, different stages of life, and it was just very lonely, and very isolating. And it was nice to see that there was a community out there, but there wasn't one for me.
Mm.
And it then
a lonely place to be.
Yeah, well, it seems like everyone's lonely. But there are people around. But yeah, the only thing I came across, so I discovered Trekstock, I think halfway through my cancer diagnosis, and they supported me in kind of getting back into exercise after I had my major surgery, which was great, insanely great. I don't know what I would have done really without them. But coincidentally, they started doing a menopause talk. I think they had a kind of a set of panels called Lifting the Lid.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And just at the time when they did, I think it was the first one about the menopause was, well, when I was in it. And I thought, this is great. I'm definitely going to turn up. I just want to hear what people have to say. And I was just desperate to hear like a curated panel talk to an audience of people my age.
And suddenly you were not alone because
I was in a room with a bunch of other people who all had dry vaginas, and it was wonderful.
Absolutely. And the turnout was amazing. There were experts like Dr. Louise Newson and so many other amazing speakers talking about really important things and coming at it from different angles. And when you looked around, you thought, wow, you are not alone. And it's finding that community, isn't it? And I'm hoping that for people who feel like you and I have felt in our journeys, even if they stumble across the podcast, they will notice and know that they're not alone. And it's creating more pockets so that more people can stumble across those pockets and think, gosh, okay, there are other people like me. And what they say resonates. So when you then you must have been a bit more aware about you, and maybe you didn't perhaps like who you become or who your new self was. But what were your symptoms that you thought were menopausal symptoms? Because obviously it could have been post-cancer, like you say. We don't know if our anxiety is because we've just been told we have cancer, or is it menopausal? What was yours that you
thought? Or am I just traumatized by the past few years? So my menopausal symptoms, this is the thing, everything I was looking up online, I was reading about people who had like debilitating hot flushes that they couldn't go to work because they'd have to get changed multiple times a day. And like all the symptoms I was reading seemed really severe. And my symptoms were not necessarily affecting my everyday life. So I definitely had hot flushes, but they were manageable and minimal. And they only seemed to happen when the weather was warm or sometimes at night. I would have night sweats, but again, nothing, not every day, manageable. Mm-hmm. I wasn't waking up thinking I need to do something about this. I was thinking, oh, I'm sweating. This is just what happens. Low libido, had a dry vagina, probably fatigue. Who knows, you know, is that menopause or is that just life or is that kind of whatever, cancer treatment? And yeah, so lots of things that just didn't affect necessarily my everyday life. I could go to work, I could go out in the evening, I could do everything. But then sometimes I'd have these little reminders that, oh, I do have the menopause. Oh, I probably shouldn't be feeling like this at my age. And I think the further away I got from chemotherapy, the more that I realized that actually is probably not anything to do with the chemotherapy, really. It's the medication that I'm on now. And it was only going to the lifting the lid talk and being around other people my age who are experiencing menopause post-cancer or during cancer that I realized that I kind of was suffering and I was just putting up with how I was feeling. And I was putting up with it because I thought the last 2 years have been truly awful. This is like a small consolation prize. Like I can do everything, you know, I can live my life. And so I just dealt with it. And then I realized, yeah, meeting all these people that actually I shouldn't just be putting up with these things. And there's things I can do and there's people I can talk to and there's lots of options for me if I can get around to it, which I realize that I definitely should and I shouldn't put it off.
You know what makes me sad, because it's true for you, for me, for so many people I speak to, is we get through maybe a year or two or however long the active treatment phase lasts after you've been given the you've got cancer diagnosis. And so many of us then feel it's okay to live at a reduced quality of life, that we shouldn't.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's normal to not strive for feeling good or like we used to feel. We almost accept, and I did for so many years, hey, if I feel totally anxious, if I've got all these negative, intrusive thoughts 24 hours, every day, every week, every month, it's normal because I've had this happen to me and I need to almost put up with it. And having a dry vagina, it's just one of those things that I now need to put up with it. And it's,
yeah,
I've come out of that and it makes me sad because I was in it for so long. And what I realize is I've lost so much time when I was alive, all the years that I was just pushing internally to
survive. I think you're just getting,
you know,
you're just getting by, I think, after. Yeah. And I think your expectations of life have changed because of everything you've been through, that you just think, I don't know, I think as well, like it's just exhausting to have to deal with the menopause afterwards. Like you're just exhausted, like you don't, and you've been used to everyone providing you with options for treatment and providing you with information and checking up on you weekly or monthly, and you've been so used to having a massive support unit, and then I think along with that, like pretty much disappearing, it is just all on you to figure out what's next. And it's not ready. I wasn't ready. It was such a big change, and I was quite happy to accept kind of lower standards of living because I was like, well, I don't have cancer anymore, so this is wonderful.
And this is the whole problem that survivorship brings with it. And from the medical professionals, they've helped us, like you say, with all that support to survive, better survival rates, survive cancer for longer. And it's how we survive that our expectations can change. It's okay that we want to feel good for the time we have here, right? It's okay.
And if anything, I think we deserve it more, but somehow we don't, it's harder to obtain.
But you managed to reclaim some of that control, right? So that self-advocating, what happened after lifting the lid? You then came on the Navigating Menopause program for Trexdoc, but what happened? What did you walk away from?
So the main thing that I walked away with is that I just had a kind of like, had just like a kick up the butt. Like I was just reminded that, you know, if I have some problems and they're not major, if like if something's bothering me, I should tell someone, I should talk to a doctor, or I should talk, call up my breast care nurse. And I thought, you know what, it is, you know, having a dry vagina, it is bothering me, but it only bothers me every now and again. And I thought, but it shouldn't be bothering me every now and again. That's the kind of the bottom line. And so it was because of the lifting the lid and the menopause course that I called up my doctor and I told them, and then they got in touch with my oncologist, and then my oncologist was like, oh yeah, there's a, like, you know, we have a gynecologist that comes into the breast care unit once a week, like we can put you in touch with him, and that's fine. And then I started having appointments on the phone because of the pandemic, but I thought it would be a lot more difficult to get support for that symptom. And it turns out that there was someone there all along in my breast care unit that was very qualified and got the context of the cancer and the menopause. And I just thought, I can't believe I didn't even call up to find out. Because I think, I you know, I'd read as well that lots of people have struggled to get, sometimes people struggle to find GPs that maybe understand kind of the complexity of the menopause when you're young and after a cancer diagnosis. But yeah, I was just taken very seriously, and it was sorted out straight away. And I thought, wow, I've been a bit of a fool to have taken my time
again, Stacey, you are bringing the blame back to you. Whereas I'd like to challenge, if one more conversation had happened or two more mentions had happened at one point to say, it's really common for people in a surgically or chemically onset menopause to experience vaginal symptoms. It could have been a sentence, one or two.
If I got, if I was given a little bit of paper that had like symptoms listed on it, and then here's who you email, here's who you call. And if there was one part that said, you know, dry vagina or discomfort, email this person, I probably would have emailed after about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes.
So and then, absolutely. And then like, and just been like, what do you think? You know, is there anything we can do? Can we just have like a 5 minute chat about it? But because because there wasn't anything like that, I had to go to the
exactly. You had to wait for years. Yeah, exactly. And you know, sometimes things are mentioned to us because I, you know, remembering my own care, things have been mentioned to me. But if they're mentioned to you once, your headspace, you might be.
Yes.
In, you know, you might not be digesting it all. And so I do think for any healthcare professional, which I'm hoping are listening to our conversation, are going to think, yeah, I just need to repeat sometimes and mention and just ask the question. And if it's a no, it's a no, she won't need help. But if it's a yes, we could have, you know, in your case, that journey taken months, if not years, could have been reduced to a few weeks with no big deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to fast forward a little bit to the first Davina McCall documentary that was on the television. And after I've seen it, I was sitting down and I was in rage. And I went and I thought, wow, they're talking about the menopause and no, nothing, very little of what they've said is about, I can't relate at all. And I know how many people are like me. So I thought, you are excluding us. I feel excluded. So I was like, woman obsessed, and I emailed the producer and I said, oh, I love the documentary, but there are people like me and there are so many behind me now, and I'm sure we all feel a certain way.
Yes.
What about us? Are you planning more? And my husband said to me, Danny, you're like those really, really old people that email their local MP and everyone on the television all the time, you're like Auntie Pam used to do that. And I said, yeah, I can't sit with my rage. I need to turn it into a roar. Anyway, fast forward, you have been on the second Davina McCall documentary.
Yes.
And you talked about
so well done, experience. It worked. Your emails worked.
So
thank you.
I know a little bit from you that speaking up about your journey wasn't always something that felt very easy, and that you felt, you know, you sat alone with it, you said initially, but you are then now talking to me about dry vaginas and your menopause symptoms, but not just now, here you've openly talked about it on national television.
On Channel 4.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I went from I'm not comfortable talking about this to I will talk to anyone and everyone, because the main reason for doing the documentary was I just thought if I had seen myself or someone like me or just someone of my age on TV or a clip online talking about what I was talking about 2 years ago, I would have like looked that person up. I would have followed them. I would have wanted to have found out more, and I would have felt like, oh, it's not just me. And I would have loved to have seen me 2 years ago during that. So I thought I have to do that for that reason alone. Just as like representation for not just, you know, having cancer as a young adult, but for people who have the menopause through cancer, regardless of any age, and just awareness, I think.
Yeah.
Just awareness.
And you did it
all the time. Yeah.
And you did it.
Yeah, I did it.
Are you still in the menopause now, or what was your further treatment? Where are you at now? What did they move you on a different treatment after the 2 years of Solidex? Or
yes, so now I'm just taking tamoxifen. I guess I've been taking tamoxifen for I don't even know how long, probably just under a year. And so now it's a bit confusing. And again, I've had no kind of guidance on this, but I did. After taking tamoxifen for a couple of months, I did start to bleed, and it's very it's not like it wasn't even a real period. I mean, that's how I classed it. But it happened once, and I thought, oh, interesting. But because I was having appointments with a gynecologist on the phone, I had someone that I could tell.
Amazing.
And then the gynecologist said, oh, okay, well that's also a normal thing to happen. And he said, you know, it might happen once, or it might happen again, or it might continue to happen monthly. And he was like, just see what happens. And so now every month, I think for at least 6 months, I've been having like a regular cycle, which is still affected heavily by tamoxifen. So nothing like it was, you know, 5-7 years ago. But yeah, so I suppose that means that now I don't have a medically induced menopause, but I'm still experiencing menopausal symptoms because I am taking drugs that still reduce my estrogen levels. So now I'm in a world of I'm not like fully submerged into a medically induced menopause, but I've got like, it's got a little bit better, but it's
weird.
It's maybe. Weird.
Weird. Yeah. Weird. What strikes me is when you said, now I'm just on tamoxifen.
Yeah.
Because many people are starting, for example, on tamoxifen, they don't do the Zoladex, and they have such difficult experiences. And it's great. You're feeling it might be a bit later for you. And at the same time, it's important to recognize, isn't it, you're still taking a medication that has big effects on your body.
Yeah, but tamoxifen for me has been a lot nicer than the Zoladex I was taking.
Brilliant.
And I know some people that have just had to stop taking it because it's so debilitating. Yeah. But for me, it's... I can tell that it's suppressing less estrogen, and I can tell that there's a big difference. So yeah, I'm not struggling with that. And it's made the menopausal symptoms that I had before, it's lessened them. But also I'm still at a point where, you know, things, I'm told things could improve, you know, in the next 6 months still, because it takes a long time for the Zoladex to kind of finish in your body and for the tamoxifen to kind of build up. And
yeah. So that contract with that gynecologist, and it doesn't seem like you take up lots of hospital time because it's all on the phone. You said the appointments are quick. Again, must have felt so reassuring just for someone to say, hey, it's normal that you can experience those bleeds whilst on tamoxifen.
Well, that's the thing. If I hadn't been having these appointments with the gynecologist, then I would not have had easy access to someone who knew what I was going through to tell them about these things. I mean, sure, I could call up my GP and tell them, but they're not, they don't specialize in cancer. They don't specialize in the menopause. I mean, some, I'm sure some of them do, but that's not the person that I would want to be telling. I'd want to be telling someone like who knows exactly what I've been through. And if I didn't have these like meetings on the, these phone meetings with this guy, I don't know who I would have told. And I don't know how I would have received just like a tiny like nugget of information from someone who was just telling me that like, it's, that's okay. Like, that's fine. And that's all I wanted.
So we
but
yeah.
But yeah, I don't, if I haven't called up, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would know less than I know now.
So we need specialist care. There's no doubt. We need, like you say, a void needs filling.
Yeah.
Until that is happening across our wonderful NHS and all the people that have saved my life and your life, until that is happening, what can we do? What would you say to other people who are in their 20s and 30s like you? What can they do if they're feeling they're swallowed up by that void?
I would just like to signpost everyone to the Trextoc menopause program. Like that is the only thing that made me not just feel not alone, but educated me correctly, signposted me to more people online who are like Anise and Louise Newsome, and just gave me more options to learn from the correct type of people, not just any old person online. And also just being able to talk to a few people on Zoom my age going through the same experience, was it was a huge, huge big deal. And I've not come across anywhere else online that provides anything remotely near to that kind of community or support. So I wish that everyone wish that everyone could do it. That was also why I wanted to go on the Davina documentary. It's like I was fortunate enough to come across Trextoc, and the timing was right. I was on the first menopause kind of program that they did, but I feel like something like that should be compulsory, because there's so much to be learned. And even if you're not in the right frame of mind for it, just to know that it's there, that there are things to do, you know, you don't have to go to a library and research everything yourself. Like there are people have been doing this for you, and, you know, and we haven't figured it all out yet, but there is support out there.
You'll be pleased to hear we've run more programs since. We're running one at the moment. We're finishing another one in a couple of weeks. And it's been just brilliant to take so many young people through that journey. And it's also different, isn't it, our journeys? And everyone takes something different away.
Yeah.
And as long as you can signpost to a couple of things that might be relevant, then you're opening up a few doors for that person. Yeah, you just want to open more doors, more opportunities to help.
Yeah, that's it.
One thing we've never spoken about, not on the Trextoc program, not before we came on the podcast, not in our chats, Was fertility ever mentioned to you? Because obviously when we go through menopause, Zodalex,
yeah,
was there a conversation about that?
So when I was first diagnosed, I was told I could go to the fertility clinic at the hospital, you know, and do the thing, and they could retrieve some eggs. And I didn't know if I wanted to do it, but I went along to the appointment. And then I found out that to do the, is it called egg harvesting? Yeah, I think so. To do that, you'd have to inject yourself with estrogen daily for X amount of time. And I was just sat there absolutely shocked, thinking, my cancer feeds on estrogen. It's estrogen positive cancer. And you're asking me to inject myself with estrogen daily. And I don't even know. At that point, I knew where I had two tumors in my breast, but it wasn't, you know, no one can say for sure if it had spread. You don't really find that out until, you know, you've had more biopsies and you've had surgery and you know, you find out towards the end. So I thought, this is the most insane thing I've ever heard. Why would I want to be feeding my body more of the hormone that my cancer is growing on? So I straight up said no. But I had no support there either. I was just sat with whoever the fertility person was. I said, no, there's no way I'm doing that. And that was it. And then I walked out of that appointment and that was done. So that's something else on its own. I think I could write a whole podcast episode myself about that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, in terms of fertility and Zoladex and everything after that and chemotherapy, it's just non-existent in the chat. And the only other conversation I've had about it was on these phone calls with my gynecologist when I told him I was bleeding again. And I said, so does that mean that my ovaries work? And he was like, well, that would be, you know, that's the sign. But he said, you know, you might actually enter a menopause, you know, in a few months again, or you might enter it in 5 years. Because he was like, we just don't know. But my time, when I will get the menopause part two properly, that time will be earlier than it would have been because of my chemotherapy. So no, now it's just like no one can say when anything's going to happen. It's just like just see how everything goes month by month.
So it's just another world has opened up where you have no answers, right? Because this is what happens, isn't it? We think we close the door. I thought I'm going to close my door with my journey to cancer. Whoa, I was swallowed up by menopause.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You try and close the door and think you can move on and get to that next stage. And now you're in limbo again, not knowing, living with the uncertainty. Will it not? And I just wanted to clarify for anyone thinking, what does she mean menopause round two? When this treatment of tamoxifen finishes, your body will do what it'll do. No one will know what that is. And when perhaps you hit your late 40s, 50s, you will go through another experience of another menopause transition.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll be really well informed as a positive here.
I'll be so well informed. But this is the thing, because the chemotherapy has reduced the number of eggs that would be in my body. For sure, but no one can tell you, no one can give you a time frame on that. So my gynecologist is very right in saying that, you know, it could happen next month, or it could happen 5 years, or it could just happen whenever it happens, you know. But yeah, after finishing tamoxifen, maybe I'll get the normal periods that I had before back again. Maybe I won't. It's just wait and see what happens.
And I guess this is a really good point to end the conversation, because one thing that this whole cancer experience has taught me is that the hardest thing to deal with was uncertainty.
Yes.
And I guess you're also a few years on from your first diagnosis and treatment, and journey with Zodalex and tamoxifen, and you're still sitting with the uncertainty.
Yes, I'm nearly, I think I'm nearly 4 years since I, it's been 4 years since I was diagnosed. So I think the uncertainty will be forever, but it will be slightly less once I've come off my medication, but that's not for at least another 2 years, I think. But yeah, it doesn't end. I thought right at the beginning of my diagnosis, we just had to get to the point where it was over and done. And it turns out, and I think everyone has this realization that it doesn't end. I mean, the treatment ends and, you know, the surgery ends and all those things, but the medication, and then even after medication, your life is so heavily affected by what you've experienced and what you've been through. There's no not having cancer anymore, I think.
It brings me to my second biggest realization. It's like you're summing up my whole everything that I've learned, and that is honestly managing expectations.
Yeah.
Every single expectation I had was not met. Every single expectation I had was wrongly set in the first place, because no one helped me set a realistic expectation. I always thought, like you said, I'll be done. But guess what? No, I'm still here talking about it.
Yeah.
And it gets better and different and easier. And there's a process of grief, of course, that comes with this, and that takes on shapes and has a cyclical movement. But like you say, we sit with a lot of the expectation, we sit a lot of the uncertainty for the rest of our lives, I guess.
Yeah. But I think to be able to talk about it and realize, you know, that we haven't had the same experience and no one has the same cancer experience, but I feel like most people can connect with that feeling and those kind of experiences of, yeah, uncertainty and just constantly, your life constantly being affected by cancer, even if you're cancer-free 4 years on, or I think 9 or 10 years on, like you said, it is a bit, that's not what I expected. It is a bit sad. But on the other hand, I love talking about it because I love that you are still talking about it now and you've been cancer-free for a lot longer, because I still want to be chatting about this forever, you know, because it doesn't go away. And the more that other people hear that, like, we're feeling this way, it makes you feel less sad.
Yeah. And also, I do think if I wasn't sharing how it is now, I'd do everyone a disjustice, because a disservice, really, because it's important for other people to know that if they're having thoughts about their cancer experience and they're 5 years on, then that's okay. It's normal.
And it's so normal. I mean, how could you not? How could you not?
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm so glad you came out of your isolation, your personal isolation bubble, and you've decided to talk dry vaginas and the rest of it, because your voice needs to be heard. So thank you for talking to me.
Thank you for listening.
We haven't spoken about your lovely artwork and everything, but I'm just going to link in the show notes to your profile, because you're an amazing artist and so much more to talk about, and maybe we'll revisit our chat.
Oh, I'd love that. Anytime. But yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, I'm not sure about you, but I just loved talking to Stacey. There are two main things that really stood out for me, and both of them I have shared at times and can really resonate to what Stacey said. The one is that we get to a stage where we're perhaps in menopause after cancer, but it's definitely post-cancer, where we feel that not feeling good is normal, that this is our new normal. We should experience it as just putting up with it, because is it almost a trade-off for surviving? And the second thing is that when Stacey did go and ask for help, it was actually not a big deal in terms of getting the help. It was there for her. Maybe the help was always there, but she didn't know it was there. And so I can't help but think there is this big void, this big disconnect in just communication. And yeah, I don't know how you feel about that, but if you're also in your 20s and 30s and you're a young adult affected by cancer, I hope whatever Stacey had to say, and actually this is regardless of your cancer, you can resonate with some of it and that you will find many of the things helpful. And if you too feel that you're locking yourself away, you're in your own sort of retreat pandemic bubble of your own cancer experience, then do reach out and share and perhaps find a charity that you can connect with or contact TrekStock and maybe go on their menopause, navigating menopause program. And if you know of other young adults, then please rate, review and share and subscribe to this podcast so that more people who need it can listen to our conversations. I'll see you on next week's episode. And in the meantime, sending you a big virtual hug. Bye-bye. Oh, and remember, if you go to buysarahlondon.com and you type in code DANNY20, you can get yourself one of the lovely products by Buy Sarah London. I know what I'm going to do right after recording this podcast. I scrape my hair into a bun, I take my makeup off, I put my Hero facial oil on, and to me that is just the best way to end a busy working day and to feel really well and good in my skin.